Thank you very much, Doug. The Council on Foundations, my organization, in case you're not familiar with it, we're a national membership association of grant-making foundations. We've got about 2,100 members, and over 350 of our members are providing funding for international purposes, either to a U.S.-based organization or to organizations, civil society organizations in other countries, like the Palestinian Counseling Center or like the Casa de la Mujer. But we've been running into some problems with funding small grassroots community-based organizations around the world, and I'll get to some of the reasons why that is. U.S. foundations gave over $5 billion for international purposes in a study that we just recently completed, and this is in the year 2007, mainly in the areas of health, poverty reduction, disaster response, and environmental protection. So U.S. grant-making foundations are in the forefront of improving the conditions of poverty and deprivation that can fuel the desperation that leads to terrorism around the world. Moreover, foundations represent a compassionate and caring face of America, and their work contributes to a more positive view of the United States around the world. In 2002, this was about a year after 9/11, the Treasury Department issued something that they called the Anti-Terrorist Financing Guidelines, Voluntary Best Practices for U.S.-based Charities. This came completely out of the blue. We were very much taken off guard by these guidelines, and once we had a chance to review them, we were extremely concerned. And the council heard from many of our members about these guidelines. What are they? What they're voluntary? What are we supposed to do? They seem very unrealistic. There was a lot of angst caused by these guidelines. Some of the issues that we identified at that time, the Treasury Department took a one-size-fits-all approach, like all charities operate in the same way, therefore these are the things that all charities should do. Well, anyone who has even a passing acquaintance with the charitable sector in the United States knows that there's tremendous diversity in the size, shape, scope, methods of operation of charities. There's really an enormous diversity in the sector. Secondly, the guidelines required a huge amount of information collection on the part of charities, on the principals of organizations that you're giving money to, on their boards, on their staff, on their grantees, on their subcontractors, on the banks that they have relationships with. This just goes way beyond the capacity of charities to gather that kind of information. And it would be expensive, it would be time-consuming, it would divert funds from their grant-making programs into administrative operations in order to gather that kind of information. So they'd be able to do less of their actual charity work. Also, the guidelines would force charities into an inappropriate law enforcement role. The guidelines suggested that charities should go around checking on the official status of their grantee organizations. Do they have an official registration with the governments where they're located? This is not public information in some countries. So when you go around asking these kinds of questions, you begin to, people raise their eyebrows. The guidelines also suggested that charities should be reporting, quote, suspicious activities to the FBI without really defining what suspicious activities were. So anyway, what these guidelines were doing was were portraying charities as agents of the U.S. federal government and enforcers of U.S. federal laws, a role that is not appropriate to charities. And in fact, as a number of the operational charities that we've talked to have made very clear to us, they have staff in these countries. They have people working on the ground, either Americans or local staff. These people would be endangered by the perception that they're agents of the U.S. government. Often these people are working in conflict areas. So to be tied to U.S. government policy and to be viewed as an agent of the U.S. government is a very, very physically dangerous type of thing. So we had a lot of concerns. The council helped create and has been coordinating a group called the Treasury Guidelines Working Group, which came together in 2004 and has been working to try to create a united front of the charitable sector in talking with the Treasury Department about these guidelines. And the critique, there are now about 75 different members of this group representing all different aspects of the charitable sector. Some of the critiques that we have done and the messages that we have given to the Treasury Department are that the Treasury is operating on a false assumption here. The Treasury is saying, and they say publicly, they say on the Hill, they say to the media, that charities are a significant source of funding for terrorist organizations, and charities are vulnerable to abuse and manipulation by terrorists. We just simply don't see the evidence of that. We see charities as doing very, very good work, and we feel that the Treasury Department is painting with a very broad brush and tainting the entire charitable sector with this kind of rhetoric. There are about 1.8 million U.S. charitable organizations. Treasury has moved against seven of them to shut them down, and only one has been convicted in a court of law on anti-terrorism charges. So we feel their whole rhetoric, their whole sort of set of assumptions about this area is not well-founded. We feel that their focus on legitimate charities is misdirected. They've said that the Treasury guidelines are intended to help legitimate charities avoid abuse and manipulation by terrorists. And yet, all of the seven organizations the Treasury has shut down, Treasury has said, are not legitimate charities. They are charities that were set up to act illegally. And again, they've only proved that in a court of law in one case. So we feel their whole effort in this area is misdirected. The legitimate charities are not the problem here. Legitimate charities, in fact, have a long track record of very, very careful due diligence. They follow the IRS rules and regulations for making grants internationally. They do all the due diligence. They know their grantees before they transfer the money. So to suggest otherwise is just not being fair to the sector. What has been the impact of the Treasury guidelines on grant making and international grant makers? Well, on the positive side, I can say that grant makers took a second look at their internal policies and procedures for vetting their grantees, and they've tightened those up in some cases. But on the whole, they've said, hey, we're doing what we need to be doing. We've been doing it for a long time before 9/11, because we don't want to see any of our resources, our charitable resources, diverted to non-charitable purposes, whether it's to terrorism or anything else. We've got a reputation to uphold. We don't want to get in trouble with the law. So that's on the plus side. But on the other hand, we have anecdotal evidence that some grant makers decided to discontinue their international grant making programs because of concerns about the Treasury guidelines, concerns that they would do something inadvertently, that they would get into trouble. Treasury would come in and take action against them. Treasury could actually even shut them down. So there was a lot of fear that they might do something that would be harmful, and so they pulled back from their international grant making. Others that we heard were thinking about, other grant makers were thinking about going into the international grant making field. They'd been working in the United States for a long time, thinking about going international. This has been a trend. And they just decided not to do that. There's plenty of a need here at home that they can be funding without having to live with that kind of uncertainty and fear. Impact of the guidelines has been that more U.S. grant makers have done their international funding through U.S.-based organizations, through U.S. charities and U.S. intermediary organizations. And unfortunately, that takes them away from a direct connection to some of the really exciting grassroots work that's being done around the world, just because they want to be, you know, they want to play it safe. They just want to make sure that they don't get into any trouble with the Treasury Department. Some specific examples around the Pakistan earthquake in 2005, and also the recent problems in Gaza. There are many U.S. foundations that really wanted to respond to those tragedies, but it's very hard for them to feel comfortable and to find the channels that they need to make their grants in those situations. So they're really caught between a rock and a hard place. It was very hard for charities to raise money for the Pakistan earthquake in 2005, for instance. So as I've said, charities, charities are deeply concerned about the potential diversion of their assets. We're all on the same side here. Nobody wants to see charitable assets diverted to terrorism or any other charitable activity. As I've said, charities are very diligent in following all the laws and regulations of the government, and in fact going beyond what they're required to do by IRS rules and regulations. They don't feel, however, that the Treasury guidelines are helpful or useful or realistic. Even though those guidelines have been revised a couple of times, they've gotten somewhat better. Our Treasury guidelines working group still feels that those guidelines on the whole are not helpful, and we've continued to call for the Treasury Department to withdraw them. And we're hoping to get a fresh hearing from the new administration once all the principal sub-cabinet positions have been filled over there at Treasury. I just might mention that the Treasury Guidelines Working Group did develop a set of principles of international charity that we recommend that the charitable sector follow to ensure that charitable funds are not diverted to terrorists. This is called Principles of International Charity, and there are copies of this out on the table in the hall, and we have shared this with the Treasury Department and urged them to adopt our principles, which they have done. They've adopted some of them, but not all of them. So that's where we are at the moment.